heaven stop the rain. I'm gonna love you till the stars fall from the sky. For you and I.
MFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. I am Derek Gary, joined by Shea Spillane. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. You dial a number and the name of the and the call letters into your phone.
Isn't that magical?
And you can talk to us. And if all goes well, I may actually figure out how to work the phones on this board for a change.
Everyone, simultaneously, please knock on wood.
I felt bad all week because I accidentally hung up on a caller last week. He didn't call back, and I was like, that just wrecks my week. I mean, I haven't been in tears about it all week, but...
Oh, come on. Don't lie to our audience.
I feel incompetent when that happens. Coming up later tonight, Massachusetts is one of two states. I'm going to leave it at that. Massachusetts is one of two states. We're going to find out why Massachusetts is one of two states and why Massachusetts is the only state in the union that fill in the blank. We're going to fill in the blank later, and you're going to be like, why is this going on? How is this state so backwards and stupid?
Are you kidding? That never happens in Massachusetts.
Yeah. So we'll get you caught up on that. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you may know where this is going. But you may also know that some numbers have changed, which makes this more interesting the longer time goes by.
I was going to say, it's an old subject that has a new twist.
Yeah. How's summer working out for
essentially.
You?
Essentially.
Summer now.
Yes, it is officially.
There's like summer out there.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Got through the solstice. We're still here. You know, days are still on the long side.
Oh, come
on.
This isn't the solstice we worry about. December 21st. That's where people freak out.
Is that the bad one?
Damn Mayans.
That's the one that means the short days are over and the days are going to start getting longer.
No, that's the one that means the days are going to get short. Oh, I guess
no.
I'm confused.
No, it's no. This is the one.
No, I thought this is the one that means the days are getting longer.
No, this is the one that means the days. We've had our longest day of the year.
But then, okay, so they're going to get shorter, and then after December 21st, they're going to get longer.
Correct.
Ah.
That's why the...
I always just associate it with the whole Mayan calendar, yeah. Nostradamus thing, so December 21st creeps me out.
The winter solstice is halfway through the dark. That's the way to think about it. That's what it is. We are halfway through the dark on the winter solstice.
We'll tell that to Alaska.
Summer solstice, we're just getting ready for the heat, but the days are going to start getting shorter if you're an autumn fan like I am.
Autumn's a good time.
It is. This, not a good time. We'll talk about that in weather, because it's not a good time. In the meantime... Yes.
For the news. In local news, three firefighters were hospitalized after a hazmat incident in a downtown Boston building this afternoon. Boston Fire officials said the level 3 incident occurred around 12:45 p.m. at 218 through 230 Congress Street, which is a 12-story commercial building in the city's financial district. The building was evacuated, and the Boston Fire Department's hazardous materials team was called to investigate. Boston police and EMS officials also responded to the scene. Two of the building's occupants were evaluated on the scene, and three firefighters were taken to hospitals for evaluation after feeling lightheaded and nauseous. It was described as an unknown chemical release. A fire department spokesman said a strange odor was making the various people feel ill. No escalated readings were found inside, but the hazmat team is still working to determine the cause.
This isn't like the mass hysteria incident at the vaping factory over the weekend, is it?
I hope not, because, what? Come on, the people that work in the financial district are the people that I try to look at as like, oh, you're the, like, I have it together, I'm not a crazy person people in our city.
I'm trying to wonder what kind of hazardous materials you'd have in the financial district, because... To the best of my knowledge...
You mean other than cocaine and pompousness?
Yeah, well, to the best of my knowledge, the only things they've got down there are money and computers. You know, it's not like... If you told me that happened at a chemical factory or a gas station or a body shop...
Then you'd be super worried.
Yeah. Big fire at a body shop here in Medford earlier today.
I know. I'm house-sitting in Revere right now, and it was very difficult to get to Route 16 because every single avenue I tried to use... Which I ended up taking 93 and going all the way down. And there were a good 4 fire trucks there.
Yeah.
And it was just smoke everywhere.
Yeah, 4 alarmer on Mystic Avenue, in case you're wondering what happened. Which is a big... 4 alarms.
Yeah, 4 alarms. That's a big deal.
That's a big
deal.
Fire.
Well,
that's
it was,
a big
and
fire.
It was a, I drive up and down there all the time because sometimes I'll go to the convenience store or the Burger King if I'm feeling bad before work. So it's right near Assembly Square. And I know that building. It's a huge building filled with wood.
Yep.
It's basically kindling.
And apparently filled with chemicals as well.
Yes.
So apparently they were spending a lot of time cleaning rims. That was like their specialty. So they had a lot of dangerous chemicals.
Oh, yes, a lot of flammable liquid.
Firefighters love that. No, they really don't.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's like the worst work day ever for them. Well, in national news, Supreme Court Justice Anthony M. Kennedy announced today that he will retire at the end of next month, preparing the way for the most significant change in the court's makeup in a half century. The vacancy will allow President Donald Trump to make the U.S. Supreme Court a solidly conservative body for years, if not generations to come, which is a towering legacy of his time in office. And it is, what I found very interesting about this, and, you know, of course, a lot of, you know, I kind of skate down the middle, a little bit left, but all day today, so many liberals, I'm looking at them on Facebook being like, this is the end.
Yeah.
Which, sometimes that's an exaggeratory, am I pronouncing that properly? Sometimes that's an exaggerated statement.
Hyperbole?
Hyperbolic statement.
Yes.
But in this case, that's what I've always found so fascinating about the Supreme Court is that you're in there and you're in there for life. Like, it's not like being president where tops you're doing 8 years. It's not like that. It's not like being in Congress where it's like every 4 years you have to see if everybody still wants you to do this.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 85. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 85 years old.
That's what I'm saying.
Still like, works out every day. 85 years old.
But that's what I'm saying is that it's who is not even elected, who is chosen to be in the Supreme Court is a big deal because this isn't just... Oh, the next decade or so of our lives are going to be affected. This is whoever gets chosen, depending on their age, the good chunk of the rest of my life is going to be affected.
30 years for Anthony M. Kennedy, who was appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1988.
Oh, you mean when I was 2?
Yeah. When I was in college. And turned out to be pretty much of a wild card. Kennedy was always the wild card in any Supreme Court decision.
Where you never really knew where he was going to lean.
Tended to side with the liberal wing of the court on social issues. Supported the right to an abortion. Supported Roe versus Wade when that came up. Supported gay rights, although not as
stringently.
Not as strongly as some would have liked. But that's a criticism that you can level at other members of the Supreme Court as well. Tended to side with the conservative wing when you were talking about issues involving law enforcement and issues involving the specific rights that are enumerated in the Constitution. He was a big part of the reason we have this Citizens United disaster floating around, because he basically said, oh, that's protected speech. And it's like, yeah, we'll talk about more of his protected speech ideas and free speech ideas later on in the program tonight, I know. a couple of things on this. Number one, the award for ultimate stupid, because there is ultimate, there are varying degrees of stupid.
Oh, indeed.
That are exhibited by people in reaction to things. And there are bad takes. I know no one likes to believe there's such a thing as a bad take, but there are bad takes. And the ultimate stupid is everyone going on Twitter or what have you and saying, F you, Justice Kennedy, for resigning.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
He's 81 years old.
Like, most people retire around 60.
Yeah, he's 81 years old. I think the guy has earned a couple of years to hang out and enjoy his grandchildren.
Most people start thinking about retiring around the time that he was made a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to pull a Scalia and die in office. Is one of the things here.
Nor should anyone.
But it's like, he's 81 years old, okay? He did not resign the Supreme Court to put you in jeopardy, all right? He has no obligation.
He's not going to Vegas and getting a bunch of hookers.
He's not sitting around going like, you know what? That Donald Trump is a fine man. Let's let him stack the court with whoever he wants. Dude's 81 years old. He has a right to retire. And if you are going to call him bad names because he's retiring at 81, you are stupid.
Yeah.
Your take is bad and you should feel bad.
I'm 32 and I'm exhausted. God bless him.
The other take that I find amusing more than anything else is everyone saying that the sky is falling, it's the end of the world, or the more moderate version of it, which we heard from my co-host, which is, well, there goes the Supreme Court. It's going to be all full of conservatives now. We don't know that.
We don't know that, but come on. Deductive reasoning, you can...
We don't know that.
I'm not saying assume. I'm saying that you can hypothesize that that's what's going to happen.
Unless,
I do have a caveat about that, unless President Trump, I still cringe when I say that, unless President Trump realizes that he was elected to represent the people, all of them, and sees that if he instates a super conservative justice, that's not going to be serving all of the millions of people that live in this country.
And this is it exactly. If Mike Pence was the president of the United States, I would agree. We're getting a conservative. If Mitt Romney was the president of the United States, yes, we're getting a conservative. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, any of those guys, you're getting a conservative.
Oh, I forgot about Ted Cruz. He was the worst.
Donald Trump is not a Republican.
Well, I mean, I think
Donald Trump,
if nothing else, he's a libertarian.
He's not a conservative.
He is
a New York real estate
tycoon.
That's what
I'm saying. He's a libertarian. I want all the money I can get, and I don't want to have to pay anything for getting all that money.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the definition of libertarianism.
And Donald Trump figured out how to work an angle to get his way into the White House. And that involves satisfying certain groups of voters in this country.
That will benefit him.
But what we've seen from him in office has been wildly erratic. And
that's what you want in a country.
At any given moment in time, well, politically erratic. You know, I'm not saying the guy wakes up one morning and he's got one view about things, and he wakes up the next morning and he's got another view about things.
I'm not trying to say that he's flip flopping. I'm saying that he's trying to straddle a fence that he was once firmly, at least maybe not in actuality, but in the things he said, the things he promised, the campaign messages he sent, was on a very specific side of.
Yeah.
And I always knew, as did, well, it's just like back when the whole election was happening. Like I said, there are two types of Trump voters. There are the ones that are eating up all the crap that he's spewing out, thinking that they're going to be for their middle America blue collar values. And then there are people like my brother, who's a Trump supporter, who saw right through that, knew he was a libertarian and would look out for people who have money like him and their interests and voted for him for that reason.
Exactly.
And the funny thing is that he, it's almost as though he, it's like when you get elected class president and realize you can't just give everything to your friends. It's, I hate to make like a middle school reference to that, but it is, it's a matter of like, yeah, I'm going to do all this stuff, but oh, everyone's going to be real mad if I don't do a little of that too. Yep. But it is strange. I mean, I do agree, as I said, the past couple shows we've done, that he has started straddling a bit of a fence. Before he was not even straddling a fence, but at least taking into consideration that he was elected to lead not just the people who elected him, the people who voted for him, but all of us. And all of us, the other half of us, are a very large number of people.
He's also, well, you're a third, and they're a third, and there's another third in the middle. So everybody's a third. Nobody has a majority in this country. Hate to tell you that.
I'm the middle.
Yeah, but we're only a third. Those of us who are centrists are, you know, a third. And then you get a third Democrat and a third Republican, and out of that you've got 10% hardcore progressive and 10% hardcore.
I'm saying neocons. That's the thing, is half the people who are registered as Republican or Democrat don't actually even know what that means.
No.
They're like, oh, most liberal issues are things I support, so I'm going to be a Democrat. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
But the thing with Trump is he's not someone who is steeped in conservative ideology. He's not one of these Ted Cruz Republicans.
I would say fist-pounding Republicans.
Who is like, the Bible says this, and I have to do what the Bible says, and American values, and all that. He's not. Donald Trump, as I've said many times, sees the world through a balance sheet, and sees the levers that he can pull that will make the numbers move in a certain direction. He doesn't see people. And I think that's a greater danger in terms of the Supreme Court nomination, is that I don't know that Donald Trump gets the momentousness of this moment.
He absolutely does not.
He may, but he certainly doesn't let on that he grasps the bigger picture with this.
In terms of his scope of things, in terms of his life thus far, no, he does not. It's the same as when, okay, so I have, as all of our listeners know, and anyone who follows me on social media knows, I fought tooth and nail to stop Donald Trump from becoming president this past election. When I was 12, or even when I was 15, I didn't really give too much thought to who was president. And when I was 15, George W. Bush was president. And sometimes I think that that's the way that Donald Trump thinks, is that he's 15-year-old me, where it's like, I'm too caught up in my own business to really care that much about this. Hopefully someone else will just take care of this for me properly. Like, that's the way I feel about him. And honestly, that's what I'm hoping happens with the Supreme Court thing, because he'll make this decision out of interest for no one but himself.
I don't know.
Unless someone pokes him on the shoulder and says, hey, dude, remember how we, like, started doing things so that other third of the country didn't hate you? You want to do that here?
I can't fully argue against that position. Because one of the things that I've noticed watching this administration closely and as objectively as I possibly can is that Donald Trump is a guy who has vacillated between, hey, you know, I'm the president, I'm going to do what I want to do, and, you know, this is a really important office and what we do matters, and I've got to do what's right. Not necessarily what's going to get me the best benefit. We've seen both out of him. We've also seen him use children as a political football.
Yes, yes, we have.
So you never know what you're going to get day to day with this guy.
God, seriously.
I think we would all feel better about this if we knew that the president was a thoughtful and reflective individual.
Precisely. Well, that's precisely the point I was trying to make.
Who would sit there and say, I need someone like Kennedy. I need a wild card.
I would say that's the thing, is that our president is not a man who uses the people at large to make decisions. He thinks about how it will benefit him politically, professionally, personally, and exactly as you said, I love my favorite pictures of presidents. When I was a kid, I used to look through my grandmother's old Life magazines, and my favorite pictures, like from photo shoots of presidents, were them sitting in the Oval Office, like thinking really hard. You could tell they were just sitting there considering every scope of every decision they may make. I cannot picture Donald Trump doing that ever. Like, I remember looking at a picture of Kennedy doing that, and FDR doing that, and even lightweights like Jimmy Carter doing that. Like, it...
You can picture Trump focused like that on a golf scorecard.
I was going to say, like, on a golf scorecard.
But not on a piece of legislation.
Or on his order form for Rogaine. Like, that's the thing.
He doesn't use Rogaine.
Yeah, you can tell. But that's what, I think that that's what everyone is flipping out about so much. It's not so much that they're like, oh, he's obviously going to hire a conservative because this is his deal. Because you are correct. He's not necessarily conservative or liberal.
But this is
he is what he needs to be when it's convenient for him to be it.
The take that I keep hearing, which is wrong, is that all the Republicans are going to control the Supreme Court now. And it's like, if you think Donald Trump represents Republicans,
you don't know what a Republican is.
You need to go back and read. You are sorely mistaken.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has nothing to do with Republicans.
He's conservative, but nothing to do with... Insofar as I'm liberal, but I have nothing to do with the Democrats.
Right, I mean, he's not even fully conservative.
He is largely... Like I said, he's a libertarian. He's neither conservative nor liberal, but if you had to... drop him into a column.
If we're going to throw him in a bucket, we're going to throw him in the conservative bucket. But
nonetheless, I agree with you. Yeah.
He's not, you know, when I hear these people saying, oh, the gay rights are gone and the abortion rights are gone. And, you know, until we get Supreme Court nominee Steve Bannon, which we're not going to get, by the way.
Oh, my God. I would officially move to Ireland.
You know what I'm doing? If I'm Trump, I'm going to make Mueller the Supreme Court nominee. Yeah, you get rid of that guy.
I already said, I think it should be me. I'm really good at calling people on their crap.
You know who I bet is...
That, I believe, is a very important trait in a Supreme Court justice.
You know who I bet has been in his ear for, like, the last 4 hours? Rudy Giuliani. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey.
I like doing stuff. Attorney Remember General. September 11th? Everyone loved me after that.
I'm a lawyer. I like the law. Rudy Giuliani. Hi, Rudy Giuliani.
Aye, aye, aye. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
In world news, direct evidence of Russian collusion will appear soon.
Dun, dun, dun.
As U.S. and Russian authorities have agreed to a summit between President Trump and President Putin before the end of the year. Kremlin foreign policy aide Yuri Ushakov told reporters that he had met with U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton and that the two had agreed to find a mutually convenient country for the meeting, which is likely to take place after a NATO summit later in July. So, end of July, Trump, Putin, one, two men enter, no countries leave, I think is what, you know.
I was going to say, are we going to start being called New Russia?
Two autocrats, one cup.
Or USAR. Oh, wouldn't that be cute
USAR.
If we were both USAR?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Obviously, everybody's going to start flipping out about this. There it is. The Russians. But the reality is, this meeting should have happened by now. For any other president, talking to Russia has been a top priority because they didn't already play
golf with them.
Well, because they have the ability to annihilate us, and we have the ability to annihilate them. And the balance of global power still runs through the nuclear capabilities of the United States and Russia. And the fact that they haven't sat down and talked to each other is a problem. Now, this is going to be couched in all sorts of alarmist language. who knows, they'll probably wind up meeting in Finland or Switzerland or some totally neutral nation.
Oh, please let it be Switzerland. That would just be so poetic.
And I don't expect anything's going to come out of it other than, you know, a chance to sit down and stare your adversary in the eyes and see what they're really about.
And maybe growl lowly.
Yeah.
Just a little.
I don't think the two of them have ever actually met before.
Well, that's, I mean, and that's been the question for 2 years is, are they golf buddies? Is all of this absolute conjecture and speculation? Is it somewhere in between? But it is very interesting to, I mean, as long as I've been alive, we've had much longer than I've been alive, I should say, we've had a very complicated relationship with Russia. Because I remember being so confused in history class, learning about World War II, and I was like, wait, who were our allies? And they were like, it was the UK, France, and Russia. I'm like, no, we hate Russia. And they're like, no, we didn't right then. I'm like, but that thing with like the wall. Oh, no, we hated them then.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just like as long as I've been alive, and again, much longer than I've been alive, there's been issues in Israel and in the Middle East and in Palestine. It's one of those things that's anytime anything happens in terms of us associating with or meeting with or having some kind of meeting of the minds with them, it's a little, how's this going
to
go?
Prior to World War II, there was no love lost between Russia and the United States, particularly between the United States and Stalin. We were not Stalin fans.
Oh,
we
yes.
were not communism fans.
I would say, I remember learning about Stalin being like, oh my goodness.
No one in Europe was a communism fan. But
well, except the communists.
When the when the Germans got all riled up and started doing everything that the Germans were doing, the Russians were more than happy to ally with anybody who would help them defeat Germany.
Which, to be fair, I mean, that's one thing, as much as we've butted heads, or lots of people have butted heads with Russia over the years, I have always admired the fact that no one has ever won a land war in Russia.
It doesn't stop the Russians from being terrified of the Germans. And they are terrified of the Germans.
I was going to say, absolutely. But nonetheless, it's remarkable looking through history. And I always thought it was funny just that it's the same way that, like, whenever someone comes to visit New England during the winter and are like, how do you stand this?
Yeah.
I'm always like, no, this is normal.
Germany came closer than anybody else, but... Yeah, no one
failed nonetheless.
No one has won a land war against Russia. Not easy to do. In sports news, in a move to make the game safer, the NFL Rules Committee has approved a new simple rule for hitting other players with a helmet. Hmm. It's now a foul. The rule, which carries a 15-yard penalty for unnecessary roughness, now reads, quote, "It is a foul if a player lowers his head to initiate and make contact with his helmet against an opponent."
What?
End quote. That's it. That's the rule.
Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of football?
You lower your head, it's a foul. Players can be ejected if they lower their head to make contact with an opponent, if the player who delivers the blow had a clear path to the opponent, and if contact was clearly avoidable. The rule is far more strict than college football's targeting rule, which generally applies only to helmet hits. So, this is the new rule. You drop your head, 15 yards unnecessary roughness.
I just started liking football, like in the last couple of years. You're really going to take away one of my favorite parts of it, which is then being really, really rough with each other.
See, that doesn't go away. And I've had a problem.
But it's just it's a Neanderthalic sport. And part of the fun is just, obviously, you can't grab, like, the face mask thing. I understand. I'm starting to learn all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But part of it is just having your primal, I've got to knock this guy down, take over.
But this is the thing, and I've had a problem with this in football for several years now. I watch games, I see bad tackling all the time. Even worse, I see no attempted tackling. Football used to be a game where you wrapped up your opponent and threw him to the ground. It became a game where you just run up and throw a shoulder into him or lower your head into him and try and knock him down or try and knock the ball loose. That, to me, is less satisfying than seeing tackling.
Than seeing someone straight up, like, picking someone up or forcing their body weight on someone
exactly.
and knocking them down.
Exactly. And a lot of the reason that this has happened in the last couple of seasons, in particular, it's been bad in the last couple of seasons, is because there has been this movement in the NFL that possession is more important than yards gained by your opponent. So we don't care if they're marching down the field. Every single play, we want someone trying to knock that ball loose. Because if you can get the ball on the ground and you can recover the ball, then you can score points. That's what matters. And that has led to every single defensive play, somebody lowering their head and trying to jam it into the runner's stomach, trying to jam it into the runner's hand, trying to jam it into the runner's shoulder, whatever you can do to jar the ball loose. And if you're doing that, you're not tackling. And with the concussion problems that we have in the NFL, that's the worst possible thing anybody could be doing out there.
But see, the way I think of it is that I think it's supposed to be a little bit of both. From what I've gathered, like, you know, my ex-boyfriend turned me on to football. And New England, don't hate me. I'm a baseball girl. But my ex-boyfriend turned me on to football, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I've watched a lot of football with him. And what I gathered that it's part of the fun is that it's that or that. It's either the, like, shoulder nudge, the, like, elbow, whatever, the slam your head into them and then keep running, or the straight-up tackle. Like, that's part of, you know, variety is the spice of life.
But see, the thing about tackling,
it's part of what makes it really interesting, as opposed to just, it's a bunch of dudes, like, this one gets the ball and someone else jumps on it.
Tackling is a safer way to play the game than people spearing each other and butting each other and...
Yeah, break them ribs, boo.
Exactly, because that's part of the goal, too. It's not just about...
to break your ribs.
It's not just about getting the ball out of the guy's hand. If you can separate a shoulder or crack a knee or break some ribs, hey, you're taking their best player out of the game. And there have been far too many injuries to high-profile players over the last couple of seasons. That doesn't help football at all. This is a way to solve the concussion thing. Now, the problem here comes on the line, because offensive and defensive linemen are pretty much like goats during mating season. The ball is snapped, and they immediately collide into each other, helmet to helmet, because they all have their heads down, trying to launch themselves forward to get leverage.
I love that people do this on purpose.
This may be the end of the three-point stance on the line. Because if you're standing up, you can keep your head up. If you're down in the three-point stance, it favors you keeping your head down as you engage your opponent. And the league hasn't said anything about that. What this rule is designed for is plays where you have a wide receiver in open field, where you have a running back in open field, or, you know, a short passing zone situation where there's only a couple of tacklers in the area, and rather than trying to tackle the player, you lower your head and try and injure the player. That's what they're going after here.
Okay, it's a matter of, it's such a gray area though, because
it's really not. When you see these hits, you know what they are.
I'm lowering my head right now. I'm not doing it consciously. I literally just did it to look at my keyboard. Like I get it, it's going to create a lot more. When they take a break to do I forget what the thing's called. You know, I'm not a football fan.
Replays.
The replay, judgment call, whatever.
Yes, it is.
But it's going to, that's just going to add so much to that, because it's like, well, did he bend his head down because he was looking at the field, or did he bend his head down because he was intentionally putting into that guy's pecs? Like it.
With regard to that, the league has told the officials, don't worry about getting this 100% right. We can find people during the week after the fact. If you don't call something during the game, that's not the end of the world. Because they recognize that. The issue with the linemen is going to be a big question. This is also potentially a big, big, big boost for running backs. Because if you've got linemen standing up rather than a three-point stance, a speedy running back is going to be able to get through there. So, time to start thinking about fantasy football, guys. Ladies, those of you who play, you know what time it is. You know it's time to start looking things over. Might want to have a couple of good running backs on your roster this year. Might want to make that little reach in the first and second rounds to get a solid running back, because this could be a great season for running the football. We'll see.
We shall. Well, in entertainment news, three of late night's most durable durable hosts took part in a rare collaboration after Donald Trump hurled a few verbal zingers at the wee hours crowd at a rally Monday night in South Carolina. Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, and Conan O'Brien joined together in a sketch that, in what may be a first, served as the cold open to both last night's broadcast of The Late Show on CBS and The Tonight Show on NBC. O'Brien's Conan, which is broadcast on TBS, was on hiatus this week. In the bit, Colbert is spotted typing up a monologue on his computer, only to be interrupted by a video call from Fallon saying, "Hey, lowlife," to which Colbert replies, "Hey, lost soul." Both comics were referring to some of the epithets that Trump used to insult them, as well as their ABC rival, Jimmy Kimmel. After the pair hash out all the different names Trump used, they decide to call O'Brien. They find him shaving and surprised to learn Trump inhabits the Oval Office. He urges them to be civil. Fallon and Colbert decide to go out to lunch at the Red Hen, the Virginia restaurant that recently asked White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders to leave. I highly encourage you to look up this sketch.
It's not funny.
It's not funny, but it was made. That's the thing, is that, I mean, Derek, you've done comedy and I've done comedy, and it's sometimes like topical outweighs thoughtfulness.
No, not when Chris and I were talking about Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom earlier tonight. And I will tell you,
because they're the coolest dudes ever.
I will tell you, having seen Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, that it should have been called People Doing Stupid Things, because this is the stupidest script ever written. All right? It's stupid. Everybody from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie is doing stupid, illogical things. Whoever wrote this script should never be allowed to write a script again.
See, I thought the first Jurassic World was stupid. They had everyone die near water so they wouldn't have to show actual wounds. They could just show blood running through the water. I remember that from being 9.
But it was also a PG-13 movie, you know? And
yeah, but whatever. The first one was more graphic, and that was PG.
Now, here's the thing. In spite of it being a series of stupid events, it delivers. Because I went into that movie, and I wanted to see cartoon dinosaurs fight each other. I wanted to see people get eaten by dinosaurs. I wanted to see people get chased by dinosaurs. And it does all of that stuff. So in terms of me giving that my money, it even though it is a stupid script, everybody who's in the movie is at least trying to make something good. Mm. No one's sitting around questioning how stupid they're being. They're playing these characters sincerely, and they kind of get away with it. And at the very least, I can look at the Jurassic World people and say, you know what? I gave you my $15. You gave me cartoon dinosaurs fighting and eating each other and eating people. And that's really all I wanted. Thank you for that. When I tune into late night talk shows hosted by comedians who were supposed to be funny,
he's doing air quotes.
I expect them to be funny. Unless we're doing a very special episode in which Ricky Schroeder is going to shoot the deer, and we're going to learn all about the tragedy of death.
But it's my point being that, okay, so it's like when I forget the name of the publication, but when that video of Trump, the grab her by the expletive came out.
Grab her by the cat?
Yes, grab her by the cat came out.
Yes.
It came out like Thursday and maybe Friday. And then Saturday Night Live had a field day with it. But a lot of the jokes were like, eh. But they were funny because it was topical and because they had no time to perfect them. This is similar.
You're making excuses for an inferior product. I'm not saying
that it's the best work that any of these men have ever done. I'm just saying that it is.
Why can't you be topical and funny? Isn't that what we're paying? These guys are getting millions of dollars a year.
Yeah, but they're paying a bunch of writers to do it for them. And writers are people like me who are taking a writing job so that we can eat.
I know one of those writers.
And then we spend a week writing other stuff and then get called and told, hey, I know that you've been working on this for a week and perfecting all of those jokes you wrote for me, but you have 12 hours to come up with something different.
I know one of those writers. One of those writers was at my wedding. He's a good friend of mine. Or I was at his wedding. He's a good friend of mine. And he can write funny stuff at the drop of a hat.
Oh, I'm not saying
any topic that you give him.
I'm saying like anyone. I mean, everyone can't. But anyone in this field can. But it's a matter of everything's hit or miss, and the more time you have to perfect something, the less likely you are to miss. Thus, if you have 12 hours or 24 hours or 36 hours to do something, yeah, based on the fact that you're doing it professionally, it should be a home run. But sometimes, I mean, these people still have bad days. They still have writer's block. They still have...
Theoretically, we have three
and
writing...
And at least the message that they were trying to put forth came across.
Theoretically, we have three writer's rooms full of people who are the best paid...
But they're comedians, Derek. They're depressed. Half of them are sitting in the corner crying in the fetal position.
We have three writers' rooms full of people who have the most coveted jobs in network television comedy writing, who are the best there are in the country at what they do.
The last part, I don't know if that's true. They're people who are pretty good at something that... won the Outliers lottery.
Because most there's a huge washout factor in those writers' rooms. A lot of people just can't do it because of the demands. You have to be quick. You have to be funny. You have to be original. You have to hit a certain tone. And it's...
my point being...
Why can't you be both? That's all I'm saying. Why can't you be topical and funny?
It's because people have different skill sets. I mean, think about it. Sarah Silverman got hired by SNL when she was 21. She never got a single one of her sketch ideas produced and put on the air. Not one. Actually, no, I'm sorry. She got one and it got cut from the episode.
Yeah.
And then she stabbed someone with a pencil by mistake and got fired. Which is still my favorite story.
Like I say, high washout factor in that business.
But we're talking about someone who has produced so much brilliant material that...
Yeah, but this is the problem. Because the joke is, hey, look, these three guys are all doing a thing together and airing it on each other's program.
But see, that's the
Isn't
whole joke.
That funny?
That's the thing, is that they didn't put...
No.
They didn't have to put too much effort. I think that's the other aspect of it, is they didn't have to put too much effort into it, because it's perhaps the first time in history that three different competing late-night hosts collaborated. And that, in and of itself, even if it was even worse than it was, in your opinion... That in and of itself, the sheer fact, and also that may contribute to the reason that it didn't work very well, because they all three of them have very different comedy styles. All three of them have very different ways of being funny.
But that's all. That's
the whole reason that they don't have a traveling comedy trio instead of their own shows where they're by themselves.
The fact that it's a historic first is all of the more reason to put some thought into it and make it worth the effort.
Or to maybe just never do it again.
I mean, this ultimately is my problem with it, because I've seen it and I've seen some recent Saturday Night Live, and I sit there and I watch this and I say, why did anyone put the effort into this? It's not good. Mm. And it's a little bit like watching somebody who has no mechanical ability whatsoever try and work on an engine. And it's like, please, why are you doing that?
What's this big plastic box with the two prongs on it?
You're making it worse. Get away from it. You're never gonna
electrocute myself,
yeah,
right?
You're never gonna get any better at this. Please stop. Except that what you're actually looking at is somebody who is a mechanical genius taking an engine and just destroying it because it's being over-engineered and underthought.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But that's the thing, is I don't think that it's so much that it was underthought as I do that it's too many cooks in the kitchen. It's, like I said, I mean, think about Jimmy Fallon's comedy style, Stephen Colbert's comedy style, and Conan O'Brien's comedy style. Do they in any way resemble one another's? No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Especially not, no. Okay, Jimmy Fallon and Conan O'Brien, they're both like sarcastic and like, hey, how cute am I? But they still are coming from completely different ends of the spectrum. And Stephen Colbert is coming from the moon.
But they're all working in the same basic format with the same formula and the same set of rules.
But there's a reason that they got the specific job they have. instead of a carbon copy of one of the other ones. The whole point is that they're different.
Yes.
The fact, and thus, well, and thus trying to combine three of those. It's like if you asked me, Chris and Phoebe to collaborate on something, it would be terrible.
But see, that's...
Krista, by the way, and Phoebe, by the way, are two of my very good friends in comedy who have very different comedy styles and personalities
but see,
than I do.
That's why...
Background.
And if you want a sense of how you fix this, you don't ask the three of you to collaborate on something.
You ask someone to do it, and then we learn find, what they want us to do.
Right. You find somebody on the outside who sees what the three of you can do and finds an interesting way of meshing that together and says, okay, here's your script. But, this is what you're going to do.
But again, that brings back my point about the timing, about how much time they had, is that theoretically, if they had planned this
for a week, wait and do it right.
It won't be topical.
Take a month.
It won't be topical
Find
anymore.
Find something else topical.
It won't be topical anymore.
The Trump administration has something new and topical. Like, you didn't have to deploy this now.
But I think it's because it was direct threats to them, and second of all, honestly, this is the first time in a couple days that everyone's been all up in a tiff about our executive branch, and which is saying something. Usually it's every day there's some new fresh hell to wake up to. But the past couple days have been the first, like, this is the first issue that we've been up in a tizzy about for a little bit. And so they wanted to jump onto that, especially because it directly relates to things like FCC regulation, to things that directly affect them.
None of which are going to be solved before the midterm elections.
Well, of course not. But it's a matter of they had to... It's like, do you want to do something okay while it's relevant, or do you want to do something awesome and have everyone say, why are they still talking
no,
about this?
No, you could have done it better. That's the point. If you're my feeling
okay,
on
well,
it is,
I'm gonna look up Jimmy Fallon and Conan O'Brien and Stephen Colbert's phone number, and you can call them and tell them.
I can call one of their writers right now if I want to, and say I can't because they're taping the show right now. But I could call one of his writers right now.
Are
and be
you
like,
kidding? They tape the show at like 3.
That no, they tape it at 5:30, and it's still going right now.
Oh, I thought they taped it at 3.
No, they tape it. They tape it like 5:30.
Are you positive?
Yeah.
Are you 100% sure?
Yes, because I've been to the rehearsal at 3.
I was supposed to go to Conan.
I don't know about Conan.
Oh, shut up, Joel.
I don't know about Conan.
Like, Derek's right, it's 5:30.
I know about Fallon.
I was saying, I was supposed to go to Conan, it was 3. Ha!
Conan.
Screw both of you.
Conan might tape earlier.
It does.
But
That's the one far north.
But he's on the West Coast. The East Coast guys tape at...
Oh, well, that's why.
Tape at 5:30.
See, I'm sorry. Sometimes I still forget that I'm... in East Coast.
He's actually taping right now. He tapes because it's 3 hours.
I would say Conan's taping right now.
Yeah, they're all taping right now. I'm just saying.
But Conan just started taping.
This could have been like a huge, awesome media event with what they did. And instead, you tune in.
They wasted it on like a lame sketch.
You tune in and you're like, meh, really? This is what you got for me? I wanted more.
Wah, wah.
It's like if they did Avengers 4 and like half of the Avengers are just like sitting around being like, yeah, oof, man, the Thanos thing. Uh-huh. That's a problem.
I'm just tired. You guys want to order some pizza?
You guys go fight Thanos. We're gonna chill and play some Xbox.
By the way, I understand almost nothing about what you just said.
Well, you should see the Avengers movie. You really should see the Avengers movie. Yeah, let's see. You're just not...
Hard pass.
Can't help you. Technology news. A Facebook patent. Nothing. A Facebook patent.
That, I was going to say, isn't that a bit of a... what's the word I'm looking for? Antithesis? No.
It's one of those...
Oxymoron.
No, it's one of those phrases that means something bad is about to happen. It's sort of like...
Usually when a news story involves Facebook, that's just straight up true.
If you know that person that says, I'm not a racist, but nothing good ever comes after the but...
Please don't get mad, but...
The phrase a Facebook patent is in that same category now. A Facebook patent was uncovered that would allow the company... And they actually have the patent, so, you know, here we go.
Yeah.
A Facebook patent was uncovered that would allow the company to spy on you whenever you turn on the TV. By using a high-frequency tone inaudible to the human ear, that's right, a dog whistle, Facebook would be able to turn on your phone's microphone when ads run on TV. The phone would then record conversations, movement, and ambient sound, as well as the sound of the commercial, to determine whether or not you paid attention to the advertisement. Facebook would then use this data to determine what ads to show people online.
So that's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, sitting there watching TV and, oh, Facebook's listening to what you're doing.
Like, God, this makes me so angry.
We're going to have Take a Hammer to Your Cell Phone Day coming up real soon. I mean, it's getting to that point where we have to do that.
It's
because
honestly, and I mean, I originally, as we've spoken about on the show before, my school was one of the first schools to get Facebook. Like, it came out in September in Boston schools, and then it started spreading to schools in New York, Rhode Island, Connecticut. And so my school got it like the beginning of October. But at first I thought it was a really great tool.
I loved Facebook when it first came out.
It was so simple. It was just, here's stuff about me. You can message me if you like. Oh, you're in this class with me? I missed last week. Can I get your notes? Like, that was the main point of Facebook, was just for college kids to share, like, to list their classes. And then it's like, oh, I missed the thing about mitosis. Can you maybe, like, take a picture of your notes and send them to me, or scan your notes or whatever? But then it kept evolving and evolving.
Yep.
And evolving to the point where it's like, I don't even think Mark Zuckerberg remembers what the original concept was.
You're forgetting two things.
Probably because the Wink of Lost Twins came up with it.
You're forgetting two things about the evolution of Facebook. Number one, none of it was anything that the users ever asked for.
Yes.
And number two, everything got worse with each new iteration.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when there was, I mean, and we're talking, let's see, Facebook came out in 2008 and it's 2018. So we're talking, I think the first big major change was like 6 or 7 years ago. And there was a whole movement of people who were just saying, we're just going to boycott Facebook. Like, they didn't ask our permission for this. Like, we liked it the way it was. This is stupid. Let's all just say we're not going to use Facebook until they change it back. And then Mark Zuckerberg just sent a mass message to every single user being like, you don't have to be a part of this. Like, you can delete your account if you'd like. This is happening.
We don't care. We get your data anyway.
Yeah. But the problem with that is that, yeah, theoretically, you don't have to be a part of Facebook. But in a more realistic way, you do, because it's become an intrinsic part of our everyday lives.
Oh, and by the way, this patent does not appear to be limited to Facebook users. So anybody, whether you're a Facebook user or not, you're watching TV, the commercial comes on, and Facebook turns your phone on and starts gathering data about you. Doesn't say anything about what happens to this data, if anyone's listening to this data, if this data is stored. I do not want the government surveilling me 24 hours a day. I certainly don't want some greedy, stupid kid in Silicon Valley surveilling me 24 hours a day.
Well, and
you do not have the right, sir.
Oh, and that's the thing, is that, I mean, when you sign the initial Facebook user agreement, like, I signed the initial Facebook user agreement in 2008.
They send you an updated terms of service every year.
Yeah, they do. And you just basically click through it. It doesn't even have that thing where you have to read the entire thing in order to click the yes, I understand button.
Yeah. No,
they purposely put pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of legal jargon that your average person who is not a lawyer is not going to read through. They are tricking people into allowing them to do this. And I'm someone who is reminded, my sister's a lawyer, my dad's a lawyer. I get reminded about, like, legalese and reading documents properly and making sure every signature is on every page.
Yeah.
Constantly. Most people are not. And I click through that just because I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and read a bunch of legal jargon for 10 pages straight. And that's how they get you. It'd be different if they were just upfront about what they were doing and literally just put three paragraphs saying, word up, y'all. We're going to start monitoring everything you do. Please check yes if you're cool with it.
If they were upfront about what they're doing, they'd lose 3/4 of their user base. If they came out and said...
And therein lies the corruption. Therein lies the problem, is that this was supposed to be to bring people together, not to make people miserable and make them feel like they're being watched.
But here's the thing. even if they lost three quarters of their user base, it doesn't matter because
they still have billions of people.
They're going to spy on you anyway. Doesn't matter if you're a Facebook user. Facebook is spying on you. This needs to stop. This needs to stop. And we don't stop this until we get rid of a lot of people who are in Congress right now who don't understand any of this, who don't get it. And we will get deeper into that as we get into the midterm elections later this year. Summer rolling in right on time, folks. It's going to have a comfortable night tonight. Lows in the mid-60s downtown Boston. Lows in the mid-50s out in the suburbs. Might be some rain around in the late night, early morning hours, depending on how you count that. Tomorrow, we are going to have some thunderstorms around, high in the mid-70s, yeah. Lows around 70 degrees, plenty of humidity if you're into that sort of thing. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, hazy, hot, and humid, highs in the low 90s all 3 days, lows around 70 degrees all three nights. Chance of thunderstorms, obviously, whenever we get that kind of weather around here. If you're down on the Cape, if you're down on the islands, it's going to be a little bit cooler. It's going to be a little bit more pleasant. If you're on the ocean, close to Boston, close to the North Shore, might only get into the mid-80s. If you're inland.
Only the mid-80s.
Only the mid-80s. When it's humid, it doesn't matter. That's what we got. Hazy, hot, and humid. And that is going to persist into the middle of next week before maybe we get some relief. We'll find out. So, summer right on time. Next week, of course, is the 4th of July. So, maybe a couple of nice hot summer days are what's on order. For your 4th of July forecast, not looking like we're going to get rain just yet. Partly cloudy.
I'm working anyway.
Some showers.
I'm sad I can't go to the Jenkinses.
And coming up later tonight, Massachusetts is one of two states that... And Massachusetts is the only state that will tell you you'll be appalled and horrified.
Yes.
And yes, it has to do with the 4th of July.
It does indeed.
We'll get into that in a little bit right after this break. All the other things that caught our attention, it is Did You Hear? Right here on WMFO Medford.
Rare, medium, well done. Cooking meat is not a time to play guessing games. You can ruin the flavor of a tender piece of meat by overcooking. The best way to be sure the meat is cooked the way you like it is to use a meat thermometer. Before you place the meat in the oven, insert the thermometer so the bulb is in the center of the thickest part of the meat, making sure that it doesn't touch bone or fat. When the thermometer reaches a few degrees below the desired temperature, remove the meat from the oven and allow it to sit 15 to 30 minutes. It will continue to cook to the desired doneness and it'll be easier to carve. This is Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. To make sure you start with the best possible piece of meat for the way you're going to use it, write for more free information on meat buying. Write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is my fantabulous co-host, Eric Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call, we love to hear from you. You can do so at 855-915-WMFO. And now, one of our favorite segments of the program, which is called Did You Hear? Where we try to make each other look like fools for not realizing what happened in the news the past week.
Wait, things happened in the news the past week? I kind of missed it. I didn't realize anything happened.
Oh, darn.
I thought it was a nice, quiet week.
Then this is going to be super fun. ESPN.
ESPN.
I can make it easier. ESPN's body issue.
Oh, yeah, I know. They announced who's going to be on the cover, and I paid no attention to it at all. I got to be honest with you.
In this year's ESPN's body issue, which is its 10th